A North Dakota judge wastes no time ruling on a big question. How much money will Greenpeace need to pay Energy Transfer for damages at that DAPL protest, the DAPL protest? A group of Minnesota lawmakers waste no time in the new session saying, we're mad as heck, and we're not going to take it anymore. And J.D. Vance wastes no time in his new role as fraud czar, suspending millions of dollars in Medicaid payments to Minnesota. Good morning, my friend. Great to be with you today from Watford City, North Dakota. I'm at the McKenzie County Farmer Studios today. And enjoying life out here in wide open spaces of McKenzie County, Watford City. Love being out here, hanging out with my friends, doing some work for the McKenzie County Farmer, KTGO Radio today. So great to have you with me today. I grew up on a cattle farm and hog farm in central Minnesota. So anytime I get out here in cattle country, it does my spirit some good. Beautiful drive last night, and it's 32 degrees this morning in Watford City. It feels really good. And I love this time of year. Late February, early March, weather starts to turn, the days are getting longer, and just makes a guy feel good. Probably a gal, too, although I can't say that I know much about that. I identify as a guy most of the time. So, ladies, I imagine that you are enjoying it as well. Hey, I could also say the Moorhead Spud hockey team wasted no time scoring goals last night. Congrats to the Spuds. They won the section championship for the second straight year. And they're going back to state, where they will hope to win the state title for the second straight year. They had not won one. If you're not familiar with the story, they hadn't won a state championship. They had made, like, was it 12 trips to state or something like that, and had never won state before. And in Moorhead, hockey is king. And, man, did they have a party last year on Saturday night after that big win over Stillwater. Well, they're heading back. And they will be either the one or the two seed, it looks like. Minnetonka is the other team that has been kind of tied with them at the top of the rankings all season long. And I think they play tonight in their section championship game. So congratulations to John Ammerman and the Spuds. All right, lots to do here on the program today. Speaking of wasting no time, we better get to it here because there's a lot to get in today. So many things to tell you about. So let's get rolling with the Morning Wire. This is our chance to give you a little almanac, weather information, sunrise, sunset, markets, and then 8 to 10 quick stories letting you know kind of the Cliff Notes version of what you need to know about the world around you. I call it semi-automatic storylines because we like to rip through it as quick as we can. All right, we will gain today 3 minutes and 17 seconds of daylight. Love all that. 6:08 will be sunset in Fargo today. And in the markets today, we have right now, we've got some early trading going on Wall Street and kind of a mixed bag. The Dow is up 90. The NASDAQ is down 217. S&P 500 basically unchanged right now. WTI crude oil down about 75 cents. And after ticking up to, where were we, 67, 68 late last week, we've kind of moved ourselves back now into that 64, 65 range where we've spent a lot of time over the last few months. Gold today down $45 an ounce. Silver down $4.55. Gold trading right now $5,180 an ounce. Silver at $86.43. And Bitcoin today down about $1,500 from yesterday at this time, $67,356. AAA says the average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas across this great country of ours, $2.98. That's up a cent from yesterday. North Dakota average price $2.61. Minnesota $2.79. South Dakota, $2.69. Shop around for gas. In Fargo, where I was driving 2 days ago, I was going to mention this yesterday, I didn't. I saw gas for $2.17, and then like five blocks up the road, it was $2.69 or $2.70. So you got to keep your eyes out because it matters if you got one of those big fuel tanks. Diesel fuel today, $3.75 a gallon. That's unchanged from yesterday. All right, what is happening in the news cycle today? Well, a heck of a lot. So let's get rolling here. In the metro area, following the arrest of Joshua Height for the murder of Isadora Wengel, the Cass County Chief Public Defender tells WDAY Radio that the state's biggest challenge in court is simply proving that a death occurred. They have not found the body yet, so prosecutors are leaning on the gold standard, DNA found on a Sawzall blade and a latex glove. Yeah, it's a gross story if you're not here, if you haven't heard much about that. First hearing in that one is set for March 11th. Police are still looking for that 27-gallon storage tote that could be the, quote, final piece of the puzzle. Oh, my word, what a story. Also today, I can tell you that Attorney General Drew Wrigley and the Bureau of Criminal Investigation have handed over a mountain of evidence to the Cass County State's Attorney in conjunction with that explicit material sharing story at Davies High School. It's a web of Snapchat accounts, dozens of seized phones and images, and because most involved are juveniles, charging review will happen behind closed doors. The ball is now in the prosecutor's court. Early reports said that no charges would be filed, but charges are still possible in that one. Well, a decade after the DAPL protest, a bill has finally arrived for Greenpeace, and it's a doozy. A North Dakota judge is set to order the environmental group to pay Energy Transfer $345 million for defamation and trespassing. Greenpeace says they only have about $1.4 million in cash, so the judgment could effectively shut them down. This settlement amount has been litigated for the last year, and they've landed on $345 million. WDAY Radio reports that health officials across North Dakota are on high alert as the measles count continues to climb. Two new cases were confirmed yesterday in Pembina County, bringing the total to 17. And officials say contagious people were recently in public spots in Fargo, Grand Forks, and Walhalla. 11 of the people who have contracted the measles virus, whatever you want to call it, are unvaccinated. So if you were in those areas between February 4th and February 11th, just a heads up on that. Well, Vice President J.D. Vance is sending shockwaves through St. Paul. He announced yesterday a temporary halt on Medicaid funding for Minnesota. I've got more on that coming up in just a minute. It is the story of the day, so much more to come. And some great sound from J.D. Vance yesterday. Alpha News reports that a new block of conservative lawmakers that says it is a principled block is looking to shake up the status quo in St. Paul. They've officially launched the Minnesota Freedom Caucus. There are seven Republicans, and it's modeled after the group in D.C. The goal to end massive omnibus bills and put a stop to reckless spending. They say they're just the founding seven, but they expect their ranks to grow as the session heats up. There are none from the immediate listening area. The closest would be Nate Wessenberg of Little Falls, Minnesota. In national news today, the fallout from the Mar-a-Lago documents case is getting personal at the FBI. 10 FBI staffers who worked on the Jack Smith investigation into President Trump were fired Wednesday. Sources say to CBS News, the move comes after reports that the Bureau had subpoenaed phone records of many in the Trump administration back when they were private citizens. The FBI Agents Association says it's a violation of due process. The administration says it is necessary accountability. If you're looking at houses this weekend, Fox Business says you can thank a massive $200 billion government bond buy. The chief of the Federal Housing Agency, Bill Pulte, says the administration's aggressive move to buy up mortgage bonds had an immediate impact, pushing rates down into the fives. And as we've heard from a number of people in the mortgage world, when you're at six or seven on a mortgage, people are going to stay put. When you get into the fives, it might make some people move around a little bit. Mortgage officials say it essentially gives the average buyer about $30,000 more wiggle room. The maker of Jeep and Ram vehicles just took a massive $22 billion hit, and workers are feeling the sting. Stellantis reported a massive 2025 loss, blaming a slow EV transition. Man, every day there's a story about how these automakers just got hammered by all these EV mandates. While Ford and GM workers are getting bonuses, Jeep and Chrysler workers getting a bit of a reset, you could say. Mark Zuckerberg is back in a courtroom. This time a jury is looking at addictive by design features. In a landmark trial, internal Meta documents revealed a strategy to win big with teens by bringing them in as tweens. The case centers on a young woman who claims the app's algorithms led to a suicide attempt. Zuckerberg argued safety is a priority, but the jury was shown a 20-foot collage of photos highlighting the human cost of social media addiction. And one more here for you, a familiar voice from the Fargo airwaves just hit the jackpot recently on national TV. Former local media personality Nicole Phillips took a trip to Wheel of Fortune and walked away with a cool $70,000. So if you got a brain for puzzles, And you can find Joanne at Game Show. You never know what might happen. She is the wife of former NDSU men's basketball coach Saul Phillips. So good job, Nicole. Good stuff there. All right, when we come back on the Steve Hallstrom Show, story of the day. It is the biggest story in Minnesota right now, likely the most polarizing. J.D. Vance wasting no time getting to work on fraud in Minnesota. Wherever we go, we open up the microphones in the Drive with Vision studio, drivewithvision.com. That's Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton. 15 minutes or less to buy a new or very nice pre-owned car, truck, or SUV. They make it easy. Paperwork simple. Right on the computer. You're done in a hurry. You're out the door in a hurry. That's how they take care of you. DriveWithVision.com, Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton. You can call me today on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line, 701-271-1100. They've recently expanded and can get you in fast. They offer counseling, occupational therapy, physical therapy, and a nurse practitioner. Make an appointment. Get in soon at valleychristian.co. I saw they had a great Giving Hearts Day, by the way. So good to know. Good people doing good things and the community supporting them well. What's not to like? Very good stuff right there. Okay. Well, after President Trump's war on fraud announcement at Tuesday's State of the Union address, Vice President J.D. Vance and CMS, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Administrator Dr. Mehmet Oz, held a press conference yesterday to officially freeze $259 million in Medicaid reimbursements to Minnesota. The vice president says, when it comes to fraud, it's time to get to work.
And we are going to start very aggressively in the administration cracking down on the people and the organizations that are defrauding Americans. So we're announcing today that we have decided to temporarily halt certain amounts of Medicaid funding that are going to the state of Minnesota in order to ensure that the state of Minnesota takes its obligations seriously to be good stewards of the American people's tax money. Now, what is this going to mean? What this means is that, first of all, the providers on the ground in Minnesota have actually already been paid. The state has paid those providers the money. What we're doing is we are stopping the federal payments that will go to the state government until the state government takes its obligations seriously to stop the fraud that's being perpetrated against the American taxpayer. There are a few different ways that we're doing that. There are a few different affirmative actions that we're taking today. Dr. Oz is going to talk about those, but let me talk a little bit about the spirit of this and why we're doing it. So number one of the examples of fraud that we've seen in Minnesota that we verify that is just awful is that a program that existed to ensure that autistic children had access to some after-school services has made a number of people rich, not by providing services to needy children, but by allowing fraudsters to take money that ought by right go to American citizens and to American families, and to set up sham businesses, set up sham clients, set up people who are not even autistic but claim to be autistic in order that they benefit from the money that's out there. Now, what does that mean? Number one, it means that a lot of people are getting rich off the generosity of American taxpayers, but more fundamentally and more importantly than that, it means that there are kids in Minnesota who deserve these services, who need these services, and they're not going to those kids, they're going to fraudsters in Minneapolis. That is unacceptable, and that's the sort of thing that we're cutting off with this action today. Let me make one final point about the spirit of this. You know, one of the things I love about our country is that we're a generous country. We're a generous people. We take care of our fellow citizens who can't afford medical care because they're down on their luck. We take care of people who can't afford to put food on the table even though they work hard and play by the rules. We recognize that we're all in this together, and part of the reason why we have Medicaid, or part of the reason why we have food stamps, part of the reason why we have these programs is we want to make sure that kids who grew up in families not all that different from the family that I grew up in, that they have access to the basic necessities, food, medical care, after-school services when their family needs them but they're unable to pay. What's happening in Minneapolis, in California, in a number of states all across our country is that the generosity and the good hearts of our fellow Americans are being taken advantage of. We're taking that social contract that says that our American citizens, we take care of one another, and we're allowing a few bad actors to get rich off that generosity of spirit instead of providing the services to the kids who need it. This is disgraceful. It has happened for too long. Mm-hmm. Far too many people have gotten rich by taking what is the best of the American spirit and getting rich off of it instead of providing services to kids who need it. That is stopping today.
Okay, and J.D. Vance, by the way, is a perfect person to have this conversation. He was one of those kids who grew up in a home where they didn't have anything, anything. And I say this all the time on this show, that we can argue about this program and that program, but a good and decent society takes care of people who cannot take care of themselves. We've got to be able to do that. If we can't do that, I don't know what the rest of it really matters. But when you have a program that is hijacked, the way some of these programs in Minnesota have been, and Minnesota is not alone in this, but when you have that happening, what you are saying to that family who is down on their luck, who doesn't have, is, I'm sorry, we don't have any more because some people got into the process and started stealing from people like you. And that statement also goes to you and me, the taxpayers. And that's the frustrating thing about what's happened in Minnesota. Yes, it's a Minnesota story, but really it's a story about every one of us. Because all of our money that went to federal taxes in some way or shape went to Minnesota to help with these programs, federally subsidized programs that help people in Minnesota, and it goes out the back door or over to overseas or Al-Shabaab or some terrorist group or wherever the money went to. Somebody driving around a Lamborghini that shouldn't be. So good on you, J.D. Vance. And every time I hear that guy talk, I think, this is my Marco Rubio, J.D. Vance dilemma. It's like tennis for me. Every time one guy says something, I go, man, that guy would make a great next president. And then the other guy says something, I go, that's got to be the guy. And then I love Ron DeSantis, too. We got a really good bench on our side. So the case for the crackdown is we have to be good stewards of the money. Now, Dr. Oz went on to say that the money isn't gone. It's not going elsewhere. It's being held as collateral until the federal government sees that Minnesota is serious about cleaning up the garbage that's going on in its state. And $300 million in feeding our future? What is the number now? $19 billion is what has been testified in the state legislature under oath, saying that the fraud, it's possible that it reached $19 billion. And that's about a third of 1 year's total expenditures for the state of Minnesota. A third of that going out the door to nowhere to get absolutely nothing. So we've got to protect these kids. That's what is happening here. You're going to hear people spin this, that the President Trump hates kids. I think President Trump loves kids, and J.D. Vance does too, and that's why they're doing it. Now, this is going to be labeled as a weaponization of government. I get that. And I understand where they're coming from. I think there's a point to consider there. But again, I go back to what we're talking about here by saying, what good is it if we throw bad money after bad money after bad money and never get serious about what's really going on here? And that's what they're trying to do right now. And we have seen this with President Trump, that if you show you're doing what you're doing, he will, whatever you want to call it, put the period at the end of the sentence, change course, whatever. But you've got to see that these people are serious to do that. It starts with that Attorney General, Keith Ellison, and all of the things that have started with him and all the audio cuts we have of him looking the other way. Some people are saying there's no legal base to do this, an overreach of executive power. I'm glad that the administration is trying. This might get struck down in court. I don't know. But I think it makes sense to me, and it should make sense to any reasonable person who's taking a look at this as well. I love it. Is it a tough love wake-up call for the state? Is it a dangerous precedent? You'll have to be the judge on that. For me, it's the tough love. All right, when we come back on the Steve Holisham Show, talking a little local business with my friend Howdy Lawler. He's the chair of the McKenzie County Board of Commissioners in studio here in Watford City. That when we come back on the Steve Holisham Show, don't go away. When I get the opportunity, the great opportunity to spend a little time at Watford City, I like to stay at Teddy's Presidential Suites here in Watford City. They've got a really great food and beverage lounge there. 4 to 10, looking for happy hour out in the Bakken. There's no better place to go. Not just for hotel guests either, by the way. So if you're just hanging around town, if you live here, if you're just passing through for business, always welcome to stop by there, enjoy dinner or drinks. You always see somebody you know. I do anyway. And I got a chance to stay in one of their luxury suites last night, and I love that. If you are traveling with kids or a family, you might need a little elbow room. Otherwise, you'll be elbowing each other, right? But you got to have a little bit of space, and they do it. And pull-out beds and separate main rooms, bathroom that has got plenty of room for everything there and all the stuff you like. It's really great accommodations, way better than what you'd expect in a community our size out here in Watford City. And it's really a great place to stay. Teddy's Residential Suites and the Little Missouri Inn as well. So Watford City, great community, but great hotels here as well. So thanks to them for all they do for us here at KTGO Radio, McKenzie County Farmer, and all over the Flag Network as well. I'm joined in studio here in Watford City this morning by Howdy Lawler, the County Board of Commissioners Chair, and always great to see Howdy. How you doing, sir?
Good, how about you?
Good. I'll do this a little bit. This will sound a little bit better. So, all right, so first of all, tell me what year you graduated from NDSU again.
Way back, 1998.
98, okay. So a proud Bison football alum. What do you like about what's happening with the NDSU football moving up to the Mountain West?
Oh, I think it's a good move. I really do. I think we can compete at that level. I think it's it came time where, you know, you want to get better, you got to go play better teams, and I really feel we've stepped up to that level. And it was, I mean, there's some skeptics out there. I'm not going to say that, but I'm cheering for them no matter what. I mean, it's a good move. I'm excited for them, and I think it's just going to attract more athletes to come to North Dakota State. I mean, they got a track record of sending people to the draft, as you mm-hmm. see in the Super Bowl. I mean, I just think the door opens even wider for them now going to a bigger level like they are.
Yeah, road trips to Vegas this fall and Hawaii and Wyoming is coming to Fargo. That's kind of fun, too. Wyoming kind of feels like maybe just kind of, I don't know, kind of similar to what we do here. Obviously, I've been at the FBS level for a while, but I think there can be kind of a built-in rivalry there, don't you?
Yeah, I just got in a conversation with a guy the other day we were visiting about we'll create our own rivalries.
Yeah.
One's going to come, and I really feel Wyoming is going to be one of them teams. You know, you got Coach Bowl that was at SU, and then you have Coach Brent Vegan, you know, which I played with him for 5 years. Great guy. Roomed with him for three. So I'd been down to Wyoming.
You roomed with Veegs?
Yeah, for 3 years.
Okay, no kid. Yeah.
So, I mean, we're good friends, and I guess what's really cool about that whole situation now that we're in Montana, but the group of us that graduated together, we have a group text message, and we're always, I mean, he's involved in it, and we talk to each other all the time on the text message and the classes. It's just, he left, but he's still always a Bison. Once a Bison, always a Bison. You never lose that trait. So I think it's going to really thrive, and I think they're going to probably come up with, like I told somebody, they'll come up with some trophy or something, a traveling trophy, and I think Wyoming is one that probably will be one of the first rivalries.
It's got to be a saddle or a D horner or something, doesn't it?
Something. We'll have to figure something out, but I'm sure they'll come up with something pretty cool for that. I think it'll be a good rivalry.
Yeah, I think so too. Well, lots going on here in Watford City, McKenzie County, a whole lot of things. One of the big stories going on here is the DOT has got that widening of 85 project now slated to get going. That's a big one.
Oh, man. I've been on the board, and they started the discussion way back years ago and to get this first stretch. And the big stretch I'm really, really excited about is south of the breaks, just getting out of there for them 4 miles or whatever it is. That, I mean, the traffic flow, the driving, you can tell the drive, you know, when you get on the 4-lane coming into town, is people are relaxed. It's not the, oh, I got a passing lane, I got to drive 100 to get around these people. It's just, you know, our traffic is a little different. We do a lot of 18-wheelers, and I feel that stretch there is just the camaraderie or the working with the DOT and visiting with them, and they took it serious. And I give the legislatures and Bismarck a lot of credit for stepping up and realizing, hey, it's a different type of traffic than out east with the cars. I mean, they have semis, don't get me wrong, but ours is more of a constant, you know, deal. And so I'm really excited for it. And the deal, like even when they did the first stretch, the road construction wasn't bad. I mean, people were complaining a little bit, but they do it good enough to keep the flow going, and I really feel they'll do another great job on this project.
Well, it's a safety thing, too.
No.
You know, you have big vehicles within feet of each other on a two-lane, and now we go the other direction.
Yeah, and I'm on our fire department, so, I mean, that was a stretch that was heavy. I mean, I can tell you a lot of accidents that were on that, and I think, I mean, we still have a few, you know, it's just natural with life, how things happen, but I think it's really decreased on that because you're not having that crowding and impatience and people in a hurry and trying to pass the semis and doing stuff like that.
So how is the county coordinating with the DOT so this doesn't turn into a big bottleneck? You mentioned that went pretty well before, but what kind of conversations do you have about that to make that as smooth as possible?
We hope to keep it flowing so we're not, you know, having the waits. I mean, I think the park side where they're doing that, might be a little different, you know, on that little 4 or 5 mile stretch. But what they did last time, you know, they tore up one, they started building one whole side and left the other side with normal flow. You know, they slowed the speed down, of course, because you got construction, but they've done this enough. You got to kind of give a lot of faith to them guys just to carry on. But, you know, you can have discussions with them. And it's great they'll listen. I mean, they do have that open door policy. We have a rep, Matt Johnson, that is their DOT guy that comes to our meetings, and we have conversations with him, and he keeps us in the loop. He really keeps us informed, and I give a lot of credit for him. He doesn't come to every meeting, but he's at a lot of them, and if he doesn't, you can call him, and if you don't have a question he can't answer it, he'll get you an answer. So
crude oil's bounced back a little bit from, I think at one time we were down in the upper 50s for a little while. Now we're back. You're kind of trending in that mid-60s area. We go down a little and up a little bit. Generally, that WTI price is right in those mid-60s there. And I've heard people say that's a pretty good spot. The drillers can still make a little money, but gas is still affordable at the same point. How does that fluctuation matter to the county, and what are you seeing and what are you expecting the rest of the year?
Well, you know, it affects our gross production tax that we deal with, like, we, you know, our road projects. That's a big thing. You know, that's kind of our number one priority is our road project, because these trucks come into town, but where are they going? They got to get off the roads. And we realized our county roads, we got to keep them just as safe as we keep the major highways, because, you know, we got farmers and ranchers and people that live out in the country. Our community is growing outside. I mean, we got developments. I mean, I rented a farm years ago, and now out there, I think there's 90 houses or something. I mean, it's crazy what's gone on. So we can't neglect our roads that they're coming off on to get onto these major highways. And so our big projects, you know, we really focus on where are these roads that we can pave to keep the corridor. Because, you know, you put a paved road out, trucks want to drive on pavement versus gravel. So we try to find the major corridors, and then we can kind of keep them trucks on them major roads.
What are you hearing from the oil companies? Are they feeling like the prices support their work? I know Harold Hamm was saying, I don't know, we might have to shut some things down or not start them up or whatever. But what are you hearing from the oil companies? Are they okay? Like, do they feel like they can do a sustainable business with these levels?
I think, yeah. If you drop much lower, I think you could probably see a little more of them like, oof, what do we need to do? Do we need to leave? Do we need to go to, you know, Texas or to Oklahoma? Do we need to go? But I think if we can stay in that 60s, the mid-60s, to 70, you know, up in there, I think, there's still a lot of activity going on. It's just, if it gets too low, the risk of rate of return is too great, and so they're probably going to look at somewhere else.
Yeah. What do you feel like it feels like in town right now? Does it feel busy? Does it feel slower than it was? Is it about right? How do things feel in the county and here in Watford City based on the activity? Does it feel okay?
Yeah, people say you think it's slowing down. I don't see it. I mean, I guess I live in the country, so I see a lot of probably out and about more, but you drive around, I mean, we got a lot of traffic coming through town. I mean, we really do. Our grocery stores are always busy and stuff like that. And I credit a lot of that is we have really worked hard with our JDA and stuff on our housing programs. And we have really focused on that because, you know, we've done well. We've got that Bakken Area Skills Center. We have the 2 daycares now. And now, you know, they're going to open that one in Alexander, which is going to be phenomenal because, you know, you get people that are working in Williston and they didn't have a daycare, so they're driving their kids. Well, now they can drop them off right there, and, you know, and so I just think we're really working on that houses because we want families. When I graduated, we had like 1,500 people in this community, and look where we're at today. But if you don't have rooftops for people to live, families, it's harder to keep the employees. You know, we got big gas plants. You know, we want that longevity. We want that generation of them to live here until they have kids or so on and so forth. We don't want them just come and go as the work comes and then they leave. We want them to set roots and then they're going to spend their money in our community and keep us going. And that's why the county works good with the oil companies. We've had great discussions with them, and like on road closures, you know, we've gotten to the point where we don't shut the whole county down. We do a zone area. So if one area, you know, cause we've had it where the West, so over by the Montana border gets more rain, or out by Keene gets more rain. We'll shut and curtail certain roads versus doing a blanket wide, you know, road restriction. We'll do that. And that, helps them being able to, we don't have rain there. We can still, you know, haul normal or something, but then they can slow down over in another area with the weight. So, I mean, we work good with them. It's a two-way street, you know. You got to work good together because they're not going anywhere and we're not going anywhere. So we've come to the table many times and just said, hey, what can we do? And their big concern was daycares for their workers and then houses and, you know, our schools are doing well. And then the Bakken Area Skills Center, I give a lot of credit to them. The oil companies are in there. getting these kids that don't want to go to college. You know, they want to work their year and a half or whatever, get their degree here, and then they're getting hired right out of here.
At good money.
At good money. And they're not leaving the community.
Right.
You know, and I think that's great that it shows we're a small community, but we're really big. But we work together.
A lot of people listening to this show in the Red River Valley, and the show's heard statewide, and we're thankful for that. But what do you think people on the eastern side of the state need to know about what happens out here that they might not know about or think about a lot?
I think the infrastructure. I don't think they realize when we're running 105,000, 105.5 or 80-plus loads of, you know, one truck hauling down these roads, our roads can't maintain without more maintenance. We have to keep on top of them more. You know, we're chip sealing, we're crack sealing, we're doing more because our roads are breaking up faster, because you can run 100 cars, but run 100 trucks, it's not comparable. Yeah. And so our infrastructure, and road projects take time. I mean, we just can't go tell a guy, go build a road. You know, you got to go through the bid process. This is, you know, how government works. You can't just give a contract. You got to go through all that process. So the money's there. So we get the bid, and then, like, we're doing a big project. We had on a highway on Highway 27, or County Road 27. We did it's a 16-mile stretch. We did 8 miles last year, so we had the money to do the whole thing. But to tear up 16 miles, we'd have been hung by a tree by the citizens. So.
Yeah. Well, Audi, thanks for stopping by. I could visit with you all day, but thanks for touching on some of the key storylines. Appreciate your time, and thanks for the work you guys do.
Thank you.
Audi Lawler here at the Watford City Studio joining us on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Appreciate his time as well. When we come back on the program, Bridget Riedel, our ag director, is down at the Commodity Classic in San Antonio. She's going to tell us what's new in tractors here in 2026. Sounds like Fendt's got a dandy rolling off the line. We'll do that when we come back on the Steve Hallstrom Show. North Dakota's future depends on the choices that we make today, and Americans for Prosperity North Dakota is proud to unveil their 2027 policy agenda, the North Dakota Road to Opportunity. They're pushing for the total elimination of the state income tax and expanded property tax relief, and they're calling for a North Dakota Reins Act to rein in government overreach, plus fight for education savings accounts for every student that will empower parents. View the full plan and find out how to get involved at afpnd.org, afpnd.org, Americans for Prosperity. And right, that's what we say. Charlie would want us to go to the meeting. Go to the meeting, get involved, and this is how you do it. Find out what they're doing there at Americans for Prosperity, AFPND. We're so blessed in this state to have Center for the American Experiment, Americans for Prosperity, so many good people trying to make sure that North Dakota stays a common sense state. We do love that. All right. When we need a little common sense on the farm, we call our good buddy Bridget Riedel, and she's our ag director here at Fieldstone Group, Flag Family Media. She's down in San Antonio. After a long night of partying, she's dragged herself out of bed, and Bridget told us she's going to have a little bit of fun, but there's a lot of work to be done down there. So day one in the books, Bridget, how did it go?
It was an excellent day. Thank you again to AgCo and Fendt for allowing me to be here for their VIP experience as they unveiled the new Vario Gen 4 tractor. It is the 1000 series. So many awesome features on that tractor. Steve, as a farm kid, you're going to appreciate this so much. When you're in transport mode, you need a little bit more inflation in your tires because you want to make good time, good road speed. But when you get to the field, sometimes you see farmers deflating those tires slightly so they get better traction in the field, better grip, and especially depending on what implement they're pulling. This tractor, this 1000 Vario, now has the ability to do that from the cab. You just got to push buttons, and it will not only change your front axle tires, your rear, but also can handle the duals, whether you need to inflate or deflate. That's actually a big time saver for a lot of farmers and a pretty cool onboard tool to go with it.
Yeah, very cool. How often, Bridget, will somebody out in the field be looking to make those adjustments? How common is that?
Well, depending on our soil conditions when it comes to planting, or if you're using it for a grain cart tractor, it can happen quite a lot. You know, you can be spending up to 14 hours in your cab at any given time during your season. And because of that, the Scent made the idea or made the plan to go ahead with some more comfort care in your cab. And so you have things like, yes, you might have a massaging seat where you're sitting, but again, you're spending 14 hours in that machine. They also have a intensive hydraulic setup, so they've got more hydraulic power for the implements that you're pulling. When you look at this machine, you also are going to, if you're buying it new, you're going to be pulling in that gold key warranty. And with that warranty, that carries through to give you a better trade-in value for the next time you need to be trading to a different vehicle. It's an outstanding opportunity, exciting for people. Today, we kick off so many more educational seminars that we are doing. We also are going to be seeing USDA Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins. Yesterday, I had the opportunity to visit with a ton of folks, including Ted McKinney. He's the executive director of the National Association of State Ag Directors and Commissioners. We had an opportunity to visit with Jerry Haggard, who is soon to be appointed the under deputy for FSA in Washington, D.C. Jared's from North Dakota. He is a farmer. He has recently left the state legislature in order to take that appointment in Washington, D.C. And later today, we'll hear from Brooke Rollins and be able to report tomorrow on all the great things that we heard from her. Meanwhile, farmers from across the U.S., I've had the chance to have breakfast with folks from Southern Indiana, Illinois, New York State, and so many more. And I look forward to hearing their ideas and what's going on in their neighborhoods as well.
Yeah, I bet every state has a different picture, but I have to believe the input costs are something that everybody has in common, right?
Ah, tremendous concern amongst all of them. And that's being shared here. You know, when you walk into the booth and your product developers, your vice president and CEOs of corporations are standing there, you have the opportunity to tell them, here's what I can afford. Does it fit what you're doing or does it not? How do we change that picture? Or I have an idea that I need to see done on my farm to improve my efficiency. And we see some of that happening as well. This is truly a business opportunity. You're doing networking with everybody while you're here. All of these state boards and associations are meeting and they're working on their national level of policy as well. So there's quite a bit going on.
Well, it sounds like it, yes. And you are moderating some panels, and that gets going in full today, correct?
Yes. In fact, as soon as I hang up the phone, I've got 20 minutes to get to the first panel. I'll be doing that with our partners at Acres TV. I'm going to be talking with Valent about a new burndown herbicide they're bringing to market. It's a group 14. That's part of the PPO chemistry. And we're going to learn more about how that's going to work, not only for corn, soybeans, but wheat, and what's the potential carryover so we have awareness with some of our sensitive crops like canola and sugar beet.
Tomorrow,
I'll be doing another panel for them as well.
Very good. Well, why would you not want Bridget to do your panel? That's what I have to say right there. So she's the homecoming queen of Commodity Classic. That's what I'm calling her. And she's a big lady on campus, and we're so proud of you, sister, and all the great things you're doing down there. And thank you for representing us so well, as you always do when you're out and about. Have a great day, Bridget. Good luck with everything today.
Thank you so much, Steve. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Sounds good. You bet. Talk to you tomorrow. Take care, Bridget. All right, hour number two coming up. We got the key three just ahead. And in the 10:30 block today, Dr. Sal Gorgiani is going to be with us. And there's a new study out that shows that marijuana use in teens can lead to some psychosis conditions like bipolar. Very interesting. We've been talking a lot about this, so we'll dive into that as well in hour two. If you are feeling a little overwhelmed trying to raise common sense kids in a crazy world, well, got an opportunity here for you to answer some of those tough questions with the right answers, age-appropriate answers for the kids about culture, identity, and values. We're inviting you to join us for an evening that is going to be one to remember. If you've got kids, I would say 25 and under, listen up on this one, because Stacey Manning is coming to Fargo Saturday, March 28th. And we're going to have an event at Capstone Classical Academy. Now, you might be saying, Stacey Manning, I've heard that name somewhere before. She's written a book called Raising a Conservative Kid in a Woke City. And Stacey will be in Fargo to help give you practical tools and confidence to have thoughtful, age-appropriate conversations with your kids. There's a VIP meet and greet at 6 o'clock, program at 7. Tickets are just $25. Well, they start at $25. VIP tickets a little more than that. But you can get yours by going to am1100theflag.com, am1100theflag.com. Going to be a fun night. Hope we get a full house over there at Capstone. Should be a really good time there. All right, let's get to the key three. These are what I believe to be the three most consequential stories in the news cycle today. These are not everybody's lead stories, but if I had to pick out the stories that I really wanted you to know about, because they cover things that are really important about the way we live, work, play, shop, treat each other, all those good things, then I would say these three stories are pretty tough to top. The first one that I have for you is a story that signifies a little bit of a let's stop messing around here attitude at the Minnesota State Legislature. Alpha News with this story. There are seven members of the Minnesota Legislature that are forming a Freedom Caucus in Minnesota. You may remember back in 2015, Republicans in the U.S. House created the House Freedom Caucus because they wanted to give just a little bit more critical mass to their conversations about conservative priorities and make sure everybody knew they were a little more right of center than everybody else. Okay? So this is an idea that started out in Washington, D.C., and they are hoping to do the same thing. And boy, do we need it in Minnesota. There are sub-caucuses already, reports Alpha News, in the Minnesota legislature. For example, on the DFL side, some lawmakers there formed the Minnesota People of Color and Indigenous Caucus, the POCI Caucus. And there's another caucus called the Minnesota Queer Legislators Caucus to represent the interests of those folks as well. Well, this group is going to try to talk about, it looks to me from what I'm reading, watch the spending, watch the fraud, watch the money. And like, let's start there. We can have a lot of conversations about the social issues. We can have a lot of conversations about crime. But let's start with the money, shall we? Here are the seven who are the formative members of this caucus. Eric Lucero is the chair. He's from St. Michael. Nate Wessenberg is from Little Falls. Bill Liske is from Lonsdale, a little south, kind of southeast of the metro, I guess. Michael Holmstrom from Duluth. He is a first-year senator who represents the Iron Range in the Duluth area. So love that for our friends over in Grand Rapids. The state representatives there are three: Drew Roach from Farmington, Ben Davis from Merrifield, and he's in Crow Wing County, so he's not too far away, kind of up in Brainerd, and Mike Weiner from Long Prairie, and he's over in Wadena, Todd, Cass County, Minnesota. So it's a geographically diverse group. I mean, you're in the southern suburbs all the way up to Duluth and then over in the Lakes area there. And this is a kind of movement that's catching a foothold across the country, not just the state there. So very glad to see this. I don't know how much these things really matter in terms of getting legislation across the finish line, but there's nothing wrong every once in a while with getting together and say, okay, a group of us are going to hold each other accountable while you, as the voters, the people who voted us in, are going to hold us accountable to do the best we can. And they're going to tackle, they say, three things: massive omnibus bills, reckless spending, and wasteful, fraudulent programs. How great is that? Roach, when they got this thing put together, made a statement. He said, "We're a unified block of principled conservatives who refuse to compromise on the core values that built this great state. Personal responsibility, free enterprise, safe streets, quality education without indoctrination, and the God-given rights enshrined in our Constitution." So I say, go, guys, go. And hopefully there will be more that will join them very soon. Story number two is what I call a paragraph 10 story. And if you've not listened to the show for any length of time, you may not have heard me talk too much about this. But every once in a while, there's a story that catches my attention where I say, the real truth here and the big, I don't say bombshell, but the thing you need to know here is buried way deep in the story. Sometimes it's on purpose. Sometimes it's not. This one, I think, is. So this comes from the Wall Street Journal. Normally pretty solid, squishy once in a while, but they have a story called "Americans Are Leaving the U.S. in Record Numbers." And they talk about, here we are in the 250th year of our great country, that we are a land of immigration for the most part, which is true. But they say, are we becoming a country of emigration? They say, last year the U.S. experienced something that hasn't definitively occurred since the Great Depression. More people moved out than moved in. So the story goes on to talk about, you know, are American citizens leaving in record numbers because they find life elsewhere more affordable and more safe? And they go on to talk about the statistics and how many young people are leaving and who's all leaving and this and that. You get about 10 paragraphs down, and you finally find the thing that I think should be in the first paragraph of this story, and that is Donald Trump said, get out of here if you're here illegally, and if you do, you might have a chance to come back, but we don't want to find you and have to kick you out. Just do yourself a favor and do this on your own. But it comes after a whole lot of talk about, well, maybe people don't like Donald Trump. Maybe people are leaving because they don't like his policies. And all the people like Ellen DeGeneres and who all the Hollywood people that have said, we don't want to live here anymore. All that goes in this story until we finally get down to, gosh, you know, maybe it has something to do with people leaving on their own because they want to have a chance to come back in the country. And maybe some of this is actually good for rent prices and housing and things like that. Certainly we can have a long conversation about taking a lot of people out of our country, what that means. But if it is people who are not here legally, then I don't know that too many people who are listening to this program today would argue that the right thing is not happening. Finally, this story comes to us from a non-traditional news source, Outkick.com. It's a sports site that talks about sports and politics sometimes intertwined. Now, when the U.S. hockey team was at the White House, Tage Thompson, he's a tall drink of water, like 6'7", a great player for the Buffalo Sabres, got back to hockey last night after being part of everything going on at the White House and had a goal and assist. No hangover for him. Played great last night. But he has become a lightning rod because there were pictures taken at the White House, and he is the only one in these pictures who's wearing a hat that says, Make America Great Again. He's got a MAGA hat on. They're all wearing their Team USA sweaters and medals and all of that. But he took that next step, not just to wear a USA cap, but to wear a Make America Great Again cap. And he was asked about it after the game. And you see a lot of this kind of gotcha journalism going on. And I don't know what the intention was, but it did not work the way I think the reporter had wanted to, because Tage Thompson gave the perfect answer. Amazing how these hockey players are so well-spoken and so able to pick just the right thing to say at the right time. He was asked about the criticism over his hat choice. He said, quote, I'm proud to be an American. I have my own faith, my own beliefs, and everyone's entitled to their own opinions and beliefs as well. I think we should be able to live in peace knowing that not everyone's going to agree with you. Perfect. So the reporter then asked him, this was an Outkick reporter, that asked a follow-up question, Dan Zaszewski said, would you talk a minute too about your Christian faith and how that's helped you kind of form all these ideas? And he said, Jesus is everything to me. Obviously, we're made imperfect. We're all sinners. We need him, and I fall short every single day. He's the one I rely on. I think when you have that sense of hope, the grace and mercy that I get every day from him is something that gives me peace and joy in life no matter what I do. And he's blessed me with this game and the opportunity to play the game I love at a high level. A beautiful family and friends and people surround me that I love, and I'm just very grateful. I might have to go buy a Tage Thompson Buffalo Sabres jersey. Maybe my new favorite hockey player. I thought you would enjoy that as well. Steve Austin Show back after this. Best thing I heard all day coming up next. Coming to you live from the Drive with Vision studio, drivewithvision.com, Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton. Well, if you listen to the Democrats after State of the Union address last night, the ones that chose to go to it, and I guess even the ones that didn't, take Abby Spanberger, for instance, new governor of Virginia, campaigned as a moderate and has turned into something much more left-leaning than that. Basically talking about, has Donald Trump done anything, I'm paraphrasing here, done anything to lower the prices and improve your economic picture? And she said it so certainly as though the answer was clearly no. Certainly Donald Trump has done nothing to help you out. He's just interested in whatever, rich people and oil companies, whatever they think. And I was listening to that and I'm like, yeah, I mean, she had like three questions and every one of them like, yes, Donald Trump is doing all those things. Don't you pay attention? Well, they're hoping the American people don't pay attention. John Carney is paying attention. He's the economics editor for Breitbart, and he's been a frequent guest on the Kudlow program, which is one of my favorite shows on TV. And he did a little pushback on this whole inflation is permanent thing and that Trump isn't doing anything to make anything better for anybody. And so Larry Kudlow had him on, and he said, basically, you hear a lot of stuff here about prices aren't going down. But John Carney, in more than one way, brought the receipts.
They said, by the way, as you pointed out, they can that prices don't come down.
Yeah.
It's not true. Prices are down on 71 items just in January, 40-something. I went through today, Larry, to see what percentage of core goods is down. It's about 25% of core goods are down year over year.
Wow.
So
really?
This is the prices are coming down. He is right about that. And then the inflation rate is way down. He pointed out 1.7% the last 3 months. That's a great number. If you look at underlying inflation numbers, they are down below their long-term averages, below their 10-year average, below their 25-year average, below their 35-year average. I practically broke my spreadsheets trying to run, you know, when was
okay,
the last
time.
Okay,
stop it right there for me, would you a second? So I have to tell you, friend, I don't understand the detail of what he's talking about, underlying inflation. And I need to do some research on this because I think what he's saying here is a massive news bomb that we should all know about. And I've got to dig in on this. But what he's saying is some of the underlying pieces of the inflation picture are at the best levels that they've been forever. Like there's a lot of momentum here. But when you start with the Titanic going one direction, it's tough to turn that ship around overnight. So a lot of things that the president is doing haven't really showed up yet. But I think what Carney is saying is get ready because we're going to see much better inflation numbers coming up in the days ahead.
I practically broke my spreadsheets trying to run, you know, when was the last time underlying inflation was this good? It's almost never been this good.
And I think you're at the point, I'm just going to speculate, but just looking at this CNN poll where he did very well, I know it's a poll, it's a CNN poll, whatever, went up 10 points after the speech. But I think you're at the point where consumers are seeing prices, I'll call it price relief.
Right.
Almost across the board. And we didn't, you know, the media that doesn't like Trump or agree with his policies or whatnot won't acknowledge that that day would come. There is a reversal. There is a turnaround going on now.
Right. Eggs are the perfect metaphor. Remember, about a year ago, they were obsessed with egg prices.
Yes.
So, you know, oh, it's all Trump's fault. Eggs are, you know, going up in price. And I think his 60% number, by the way, it's different than the number I had in there, but it may be right because eggs did go up a little bit. So if you depending on when you do it from, so if he did it from the peak, they're down a lot, egg prices. And what I would say is that reality will beat rhetoric.
Mm.
The fact that people get to see that prices are not rising as fast as they were, a lot of prices are falling, and their wages are climbing at rates we haven't seen for a long time.
All right. So when Carney's talking about these items, we're not just talking about some sort of obscure industrial chemical components here. He's talking about the stuff in your garage and the stuff in your fridge. And gas, if it's down 7%, eggs are down 30%. Those things are key, especially if your wages are increasing like they say that they are. It's a double whammy. And you get more buying power, which is why they talk now about how they are able to calculate these numbers about buying power. So when you talk about the things that go into all that, the real wages stuff, if your raise last year was 3%, but all those things went down by 2%, so you had a 1% better situation there. And Carney is saying the wage-to-price gap that we're talking about here has now flipped in favor of the worker, and it hasn't been that way for quite some time. And what does this mean on tariffs? Of course, the deceptive folks in this conversation want you to believe that tariffs are causing a ton of inflation. And they've got some number here about the American family having like $1,000 more of a bill than they had for these things before. But they're not talking about the wage growth issue. And I don't even know if their math is right. Because if you've got a 25% factor in the things that go into the consumer price index going down, then I don't know how that happens. And with tariffs, they keep saying that these tariffs are going to be so inflationary, but the inflation, you know, the month over month, the year over year keeps going down. Generally speaking, you have a month that's a blip up or so here and there, but generally speaking, they're going down. And the trueflation number, which you hear a lot of people talking about, a kind of an alternative method for measuring inflation, which takes like 14 million things into account, they're saying that number is right around 1%. So this is the grounds, they say, for a potential interest rate cut or two or three of them. So what are these 71 things that went down? Well, here's a few of the kind of frequent flyers, I guess, or the things that we would buy more of that you might recognize. Eggs are down. Dairy products are down. Fresh vegetables are down. Ham and pork. Canned fruits and vegetables. Out in the garage, cars and trucks, used cars and trucks, down 2% year over year. Major appliances, household furnishings, smartphones and electronics. Gas is down about 8% over the last year. Fuel oil down 6% month over month. Motor vehicle insurance, praise Jesus, has finally started to tick down after 2 years of record hikes. That was down 0.4%. Can it last? I don't know, but I'll take it, right? You've had an insurance bill or a renewal there. And clothing and footwear. Now, some of that might be seasonal, clearing out winter inventory, but hey, we'll take a win where we can get it. So love all those things. And as I said, when they talk about the underlying inflation numbers there, my guess is they're talking about things we use most often and not, you know, getting your dog trimmed. A few people do that sometimes, but you know, how often are we buying gas, right? A lot more than that. So we'll dig into that a little bit more. But I thought that was really good. Prices are coming down, not on everything, but when's the last time you heard somebody have an honest discussion about prices and say, yeah, you know what, inflation's been a little sticky at times, but we are starting to see now 25% of the items in the CPI index have gone down, including these 71 items. So I just think it's absolutely fantastic. Are you feeling it? Are you seeing it? I guess that's the biggest question. If you want to weigh on that, you sure can at 701-271-1100. When we come back, something I'm really excited to talk about with you. We talk a lot about marijuana, and people say it'll be good if we legalize it, but we're starting to see psychological conditions that might argue otherwise. This is very, very, very worrying. Those words coming from a psychiatrist at Columbia University after surveying the data that happened after a study of marijuana use among teens. And to talk about this very important subject is a guest that I'm really excited to interview today and have you meet him as well. Dr. Sal Giorgiani is with us today. He is a senior science advisor of the Men's Health Network and a past chair at the American Public Health Association. He's been in a clinical pharmacy for more than 40 years, and he's an advocate for better health resources and services for boys and men. And I imagine for girls and women, too, but he's done most of his work centering there. Dr. Giorgiani, we appreciate so much you joining us today. Thank you for your time, sir.
I appreciate you having me on the program to talk about this very stunning and important bit of research work.
I have for a long time just been suspicious, and I'm not a doctor. I don't know anything, but I've said to my audience at times and others, show me a group of 100 recreational drinkers, I'll show you one group of people. Show me a group of 100 recreational marijuana users, I'll show you a very different group of people. And I'm stereotyping a little bit, but it's just always been one of those things in my mind where I say, I don't believe that marijuana is as harmless as people say. I don't believe that when Colorado and other states legalize it and looking for the money grab, that it's going to be a net benefit to them in the end. And now we see this study that has come out, and it's been published in the latest Journal of American Medical, the JAMA Health Forum. So this is not some obscure study here. And they looked at almost 500,000 teenagers in California. Tell us about what you took away from that survey.
Well, this work was what we call a retrospective analysis of data on file. So it's one of these kinds of studies that gives important signals and clues as to what's going on in the real world. There are some limitations to studies of this type. You can't remove all the confounding factors, all the confusing factors, some of the conflicting factors. You're never quite sure you're getting all of the information. So with those top-line caveats in mind, this study showed that the increase in psychotic events including bipolar conditions, schizophrenia, sometimes long-lasting. It's found to be dramatically increased in individuals in the cohorts that were studied, primarily under 25 years of age. One of the reasons that we believe we see these high levels of psychotic episodes and mental illness in individuals who are consistent marijuana users or frequent marijuana users, however you want to phrase it, is because the brain itself doesn't fully developmentally mature until around 25, 24, 25, 27 years of age. So you have a group of individuals who are utilizing a neurologic substance, a chemical substance that is psychoactive, substance that has an impact on the brain. And what we're also seeing at the same time is that the use of this substance, cannabinoids, can change the architecture, the actual anatomic structure of the brain, the way the brain makes connections in the neurologic functions. There are some also very sophisticated imaging studies that go and look at how these agents change the structure and connectivity, if you will, of brain function. So you put this all together with the immaturity of younger individuals, the fact that they are still learning how to deal with society, deal with themselves. They have a tremendous amount of self-doubt, and you overlay the use of a psychoactive substance, and this is just a bomb that goes off in these individuals.
Dr. Giorgiani, I hear a lot of people say, okay, Steve, if cannabis is a naturally growing plant, it's just growing out in nature, it does grow naturally, how can this be so harmful? What do you say to that?
Well, cocaine is too. When you take a look at that, curare is a naturally occurring substance, the nerve toxin that's used. The nerve toxins used from venomous frogs and things that kill Russian spies, if you will. These are all natural substances. Just because something is natural doesn't mean that in proper concentration or administered in a certain way, it's good for you. So you've got to get past the notion, look, sugar is a natural substance. Too much sugar, consistently used in the wrong way, is one of the principal causes for diabetes in Americans. So, yeah, just because something's natural doesn't necessarily mean it's A-OK. And by the way, alcohol is also a natural substance. It's an extraction, but it's a natural occurring substance in plants that you just pull out and you ferment. So, the other thing to keep in mind is that legislation that was passed to certify cannabinoids are acceptable for recreational purposes, where I think by and large, based on the type of cannabis that we saw back in the 1960s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. And the cannabis that we have in the 21st century, in 2025, 2026, is a very different type of substance. It's about 20 times, the actual amount of THC component for the cannabis in earlier decades was maybe 3, 4, or 5%. Now we're seeing concentrations often in the 20% or sometimes even higher. And it's compounded by the fact that what these young folks and older folks are ingesting isn't just the smoked herbals, but it also concentrates, dabs, vapes, other methods of ingesting cannabinoids. So you got a stronger, more potent product that is being used not just once in a little while for relaxation, but being used chronically, sometimes often as every day, in some of these younger individuals who have little self-control. And again, you're talking about something very, very different than the occasional use that people who put this legislation together in the 70s were used to seeing.
Very interesting. As a doctor, would you please talk about this study? As I look at this, I'm sure there are some studies that are done that seem kind of sketchy and sort of incomplete. But I, from what I can tell here, you've got a pool of 460,000 teenagers, and these teens were followed for a minimum of 5 years from ages 19 to 25, and they excluded any adolescents who had symptoms of medical or mental illnesses. before using cannabis. So it looks like to me this was done very responsibly. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, it is for the type of study that it is, given all the things that I mentioned, can make it a little bit muddy, if you will, not crystal clear or 100% pristine. It is a well-designed, well-executed retrospective study of data. The fact that they pulled out as many confounding factors as they could find, I think, is a very important thing that lends strength to it. But here again, I think we have to take that with some other real-world data that to show the exacerbation. So, for example, one of the things that we see is in this population of individuals 15 to 24, 25, we see a dramatic rise in emergency department admissions that are associated with psychotic and other events associated with marijuana use. So, for example, nationwide, we're seeing maybe a 400% increase in some places. When I talk with folks, and I just did a little discussion with some folks in Oregon, they have seen a 2,000% increase in emergency department admissions associated with marijuana use. And in North Dakota, the reports that I've seen shown that the visits from 2016, there were about 556 visits in the emergency department for marijuana-associated conditions in 2016. In 2023, that's 2,400 visits. So that's a big rise in just a very short period of time. Now, in there was also the confounding factor of COVID lockdowns, the dramatic increase in what I think is a toxic wasteland of fantasy, which is the ultra-violent ranges of social media and gaming. So you have some other confounding factors here. But there is no doubt that it is a mental issue that will have long-lasting side effects in these individuals who are now developing anatomical abnormalities and abnormalities and disruptions in the normal neurologic functions of the brain. It could carry through their adulthood. We don't know yet, but it's a scary thought to think about that.
How much credibility does it bring in your mind that this wasn't just some study that Steve Hallstrom decided to do and put out on my Twitter account? This was published in the Journal of American Medical Association and one of the world's most prestigious general medical journals. How much does that add to the credibility and the weight that this information has?
Well, we are all trained when we get those white coats slapped on our shoulders there to be very critical and very, critical when you look even in the highest tier publications, because people make mistakes, so there are sometimes flaws, or you rush to get something out, or there's a flaw in logic. But in scheme of things as to high tier levels of data and high tier level of publication credibility and quality control, if you will, something coming out in JAMA has to be taken very seriously.
Last question for you. We've been told that, well, if marijuana, cannabis, some sort of edible liquid, whatever derivative is given to you by a doctor for medicinal purposes, it seems like that's been a little bit more generally accepted, a little bit more legitimate. But does this research and maybe other things you've seen cause you to question even that?
Well, no, I am a firm believer that properly supervised, appropriately utilized cannabinoids for medical conditions, glaucoma, muscular dystrophy, cirrhosis, also conditions, chronic pain in individuals who have no relief from anything else is perfectly appropriate. My son, who's a family physician, and I both believe that is a medically appropriate modality, just as there's so many other things. But we don't go running around tripling and quadrupling the doses of other medications or opiates. We saw what happened with that. So, yeah, there are legitimate uses to cannabinoids in a medical context. I think where I draw the line is in the recreational use of it, particularly in young individuals.
Really interesting stuff. Dr. Georgiani, thank you for taking the time. We've all learned a lot today, and this is really important, I think, for us to know about this and for parents especially to begin talking to their kids at a young age about this. Thank you so much, sir. I appreciate your time. Hopefully we can visit again.
Anytime I can be a help, give me a call.
Take care, sir. Appreciate it very much. Dr. Sal Georgiani And he is a past chair emeritus of the American Public Health Association. Interesting stuff there. When we come back, CBS News, they're trying to do things different. I like what I see. We'll review some news homepages next. If you're looking for a great career, no better place than Vision Ford Lincoln, where their service technicians make really good money. How good? Well, more than anywhere else in the five-state area. No weekends, full benefits. Vision Ford Lincoln. Put your service career in overdrive. Go to drivewithvision.com. Let's go to the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Grant is on the line, wants to talk today. Hey, Grant, what's going on?
Hey, Steve. I think we have to be more careful with how we discuss this inflation. You know, we just climbed K2 or Mount Everest final summit. We're hanging out at the top, and we keep dancing around, plateaued, and that's what they're gauging this by. The 0.09 to the 0.19% inflation, you're still 35, 40% higher than you were under Biden's willpower, mind you. But that's not helping the American people. So when everyone's saying and cheering, telling them how good they have it, and this is, we got to be very careful. And I know that I support the president and everything that they're doing. But to tell the American people that they're doing better than what they are, I mean, go – still ask people how their groceries are. And I'm so sick of this egg comparison thing. It's the overall inflation that is killing the people. Yeah. And they can say, well, the interest rates, you know, they're bouncing at 7%. And they've been higher. Your prices are still way out of whack for that interest rate to work. If you were to go to 0% on interest rates to where we get to 3% and less than 3%, maybe you could start buying these high purchases. But until that happens, I don't know. If we don't get a depression to correct this, and it's going to be trouble for everybody. It's a shotgun effect.
Yeah, we could do a two-hour show on this, Grant. You're speaking my love language here when it comes to economics. You're 100% right. The problem is that in a campaign, the president is going to paint the picture that I can bring prices down and I will make things lesser than they were. Now, he's done some of that, and we spent a fair amount of time talking about that. But for most people, they don't care so much about what the inflation percent is. They care about how affordable are things and how expensive is it to live my life. And what happened under the Biden administration, like 9% one year, 5% another year, it was basically 20% over 4 years. And so we still have that. And a lot of people have not yet been able to digest that and swallow that. In fact, most of us have not. So you're right. We talk a lot about inflation. We need to talk about affordability. That's a double-edged sword, obviously, because if you don't do everything that you had said you were going to do, or you don't live up to what people think you promised them during a campaign, they're going to be crabby at you. And most people are not looking at the 71 items that have come down a little bit. They're looking at the other 200 items or whatever's in the basket and saying things as a whole are still more expensive. And certainly we see that in services more than we see it in goods right now. Goods numbers look a little bit better. But if you have to hire somebody to do something for you, those things are still off the charts expensive. It's just hard to get people to do things. So I think you make some really good points. I just think we have to be fair in this conversation because people are asking Donald Trump to be a miracle worker. And while I think he's doing some good things, and he is doing some good things, it just hasn't all landed on people's checkbooks yet that, hey, I'm paying less for everything than I was before. I don't know how much of that's realistic because things are always going to get a little bit more expensive. But I do think that what the president has done so far will help. And I think the wage issue is going to be the part of this that balances most because I think we're going to see with the increased productivity, more things coming back home. I think this is going to be a really good time for the American worker, kind of like what we had right after COVID. Those are my two cents on that, Grant, but thanks for giving a call. Any last words on that?
Hey, so if you were the Fed chair, and I know they want to go down to 0% interest rate, but we know that we're going to have more price control go out of control. It's going to make things go higher. I mean, wouldn't you say, as painful as it would be, wouldn't we want to ratchet the interest rate up even higher like it was in the 80s to curb this disastrous stuff? I mean,
oh, I love this.
And, you know, equipment is still out of reach. And the new stuff is, I mean, new vehicles, $100,000. Come on.
Yeah. Yep.
So, I mean, I don't think if you don't go to 15, 20% interest rate, and I know that's terrible, that's shocking, but actually see things come down in price. I mean, that's the problem. If we go to 0% interest rate, you're going to have things that are higher go even higher.
Yeah. So the counter to that is what Kudlow would and Art Laffer would tell you, Steve Moore would tell you, and that is that we are starting to see the benefits of all this policy starting to help in the inflation world. And we had a tough number the last month that it came out, but I think Carney said earlier in the show 1.7% average annual over the last 3 months. So I think those guys would tell you the numbers are getting better. You're going to get one exception here and there along the way, but overall you're seeing a downtrend. So if you have a deflationary, not a declining inflation, not deflate, declining inflationary environment right now, then you can lower rates, because if you can keep this where it's at 2.5-ish%, most people say I can live with that. But if you can reduce interest rates to do that, and then you have some of these small increases happening by lowering the interest rates, but you still keep yourself between 2 and 3, I think that's an area that people can live in. And then you see it costs you less for your student loan, your car loan, and all those things. So I think you can kind of play both sides against the middle there. And I do think you can decrease interest rates, maybe not down to zero, but I'd like to see what happened if we took a percent off that Fed funds rate, because I think what I see in the momentum of the decline, I think it balances out. Grant, got to leave it there, but thank you for giving us a call. I love this conversation. Could do this stuff all day. Well, that'll do it for the show today. Stay tuned. Scott Henin, as sleep deprived as he might be, I think he got back at about 1 o'clock this morning, but he's in for the What's On Your Mind program. Should be a great show recapping his trip to DC. That's coming up next. Have a great day, my friend, and keep on flying that flag.